The sun goes down, the stars come out, and all that counts is here and now. My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came. I'm glad you came.
You are listening to Paramania Radio.
The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Paramania, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
You are listening to Paramania Radio.
Through the world of parapsychology by exploring the human mind, the spiritual realm, and all the unlocked doors of the universe. Welcome to The Skeleton Key. Now the host of The Skeleton Key, Paranormal Sarah.
And welcome, everybody, to The Skeleton Key. I'm so glad you're joining me. It looks like we've got some fun new faces in the chat room. And we're coming in late, but we're coming in after a really good show there. I hope you were tuning in. There was all kinds of fun conversation of skunk haircuts and craziness and Australia haunted shows and more, which just makes me think of my friend Rob Demarest, who has an Australian thing going right now over there. It's actually a country that I've never been to, and I would so absolutely love to visit continent-wise. So many scary things in that direction, though. Not spiritually speaking, but like animal-wise speaking. You know, octopus and squid and spiders and snakes and like everything wants to put you in a pouch or eat you. So I commend them over there. Anyway, tonight's show is going to be interesting. We're going to start off talking about, of course, all things paranormal, parapsychological, and crazy and down into the rabbit hole. But we're also going to bring in a guest here later in the show by the name of Stacy Couch. And she's an author, but she's also a wildlife biologist, someone who is coming from a scientific, objective place and finding her way through bombardment, synchronicity, coincidence, what other words you want to use, being torn and pulled into the spiritual. And into that spiritual realm, she's going down that shamanistic path and seeing hawks and seeing wildlife. And we're going to be talking a little bit about all of that and that conflict of science and spirituality. But are the two even conflicted? Do you think that those two are conflicted? Do you find that, you know, you have to have one or the other? That you can't be scientific and spiritual or vice versa? You have to choose a single path. To me, that's really, really an interesting conflict because, well, the field of psychology is kind of considered a hub science or a pseudoscience. And so there's not a huge conflict with it. You can be a little subjective and you can be a little objective, and that's okay. But when you're someone who is in the wildlife or biology in the science sect, it definitely is more objective and definitely a little bit more rigid. And so I'm interested. For those of you, I hope that you are tuning in and listening and that you have an opinion. Where are you scientific or are you spiritual? Do you feel that the two can mesh, that the two can meld? You know, my husband, he is in the philosophical realm. So, of course, you can kind of mesh and meld that. pretty easily, I think. You can be a little bit of both because that's kind of wishy-washy in most people's eyes as well. But what about law? What about medicine? Are these things objective? Or maybe is holistics not objective? You start kind of finding that what might be paranormal now used to be normal. You know, you begin to see that there is this kind of woven fabric of it all. So I'm excited, of course, to bring on a guest to kind of talk with me about her perspective on coming from a really, really objective and rigid field and melding that into an everyday lifestyle that's more of a shamanistic or spiritual path.
Hello.
There she is. Hi. We've made the connection. So I don't know if you were on hold or not, Stacey, but I was kind of introducing you as being someone I was excited to talk with because you come from a background of wildlife biology. That's kind of a rigid science, and yet you've talked about and written about the experience and conflict of becoming a little bit more subjective, becoming a little bit more spiritual, like there's a dualism or like they're the opposite of each other. And I'm interested how you've coped with that. And if you could maybe give us a little introduction to who you are. I introduced you as an author, but who is Stacey Couch?
Wow. Yeah, it's really easy to use the labels, right? To explain who we are, author, shamanic practitioner, artist, I would say, is in there as well. Horse lover, animal lover, all of those kind of things. So labels are really easy. But I would say on a deep level that I am a mystic, a spiritual seeker. I'm really interested to know what is beyond this world, and that is a big part of who I am, and also come into contact with that, what is bigger than us, and what we can't necessarily feel and sense with our five senses. And yeah, so you talk about the rational and intuitive sides, right? The left brain and the right brain. And a lot of people also parallel that with the masculine and feminine. And at first I really did think that when I started moving out of scientific realm and more into spiritual seeking and bigger life questions, like why am I here, I couldn't reconcile the two. So I really had to set science aside and really learn how to turn that logical, rational mind off and just trust and just open up to what was available. But I've really found now, once I learned how to trust my intuitive side and really move into faith with that, that I was able to bring the science and the rational mind back in, and the two serve each other in a really awesome way now in my life.
Oh, I like that. I like that because I kind of talk a lot about the importance of having that balance, that like we really want skepticism and we should welcome constructive criticism. And eventually we learn that like that's that momentum of cyclical growth, you know, and it's exciting to hear someone say, you know, firsthand that that's the experience that they've had, and that you couple linguistically trust with faith, you know, trusting your intuition and kind of having this faith in yourself. And I love that because we've talked a lot about on this show in the past, spirituality and how a lot of it comes through that faith, and that it's not faith if it is proven objectively, in a sense, that there has to be this self-exploration, that it doesn't fit in a cup or a, you know, a box and, you know, nightly tied with a bow, you know, that's not what spirituality is. It has to be acquired differently. It's not empirical in a sense. And I kind of like that you coupled that together. That was really nice. So for those people who can check you out online, your introduction is so whimsical. I really love it. It illustrates this experience that you've had in self-exploration with the image of the hawk. And I'm interested, we've had a lot of listeners on our show who are really interested in animal guides and spirit guides, but they want to know, you know, how do you know what that meaning of that animal is? Like maybe they continue to see the owl over and over and over, but they don't know what that means. You know, what book or what culture is right? You know, how do you differentiate what that animal spirit is, or how did that work for you?
I started out, like most people, with books. So I was really familiar from very young age, probably 11 or 12. My mom got the medicine cards by David Carson and Jamie Sams. And so that was my initial introduction into spirit animals or power animals and how to start interpreting them. And then Animal Speak by Ted Andrews, that's like a Bible for a lot of people. And there's a lot of other great books out there that share, basically they're act as oracles, give you the definition. But say you see, I've always, as a wildlife biologist, I know about how much diversity there is in the world. And I know that there's over 300 species of owls around the world, right? As maybe it's like 160. I don't know the number off the top of my head, but there's, you know, way more than just 10 owls around the world. So I am always curious too, at the species level, okay, well, here's the big picture of owl, but what is the species level? Or I can't find this animal in a book. So I've had sat with that question for years and years because it's been so fascinating to me. Well, how do you create these interpretations and what do I do when I can't find them in a book? And I've actually been developing a whole system around that. There's where the science mind comes in. And there's so many different avenues to get information about these animals. And really, a lot of it really stems with first the ability to be able to think in metaphor and think in symbols or in symbology. And that takes an ability to let go of the literal and also at the same time be okay with the literal. So if we think about owls, we think often of their association with the goddess Athena, and she's all about wisdom. So there's a very direct and literal connection. Owls are associated with wisdom. We look at owls and their ability to see in the dark, right? They're incredibly good at seeing in the dark. So this is about looking at the metaphor of what is seeing in the dark mean. It means, what happens? How do we feel when we're in the dark? We can't see anything. Life's a mystery. Things are unknown to us. We don't know where we're going. We can't even barely feel our way around. And so it's that ability to start to intuit or use something other than our five senses to move forward and see in the dark, essentially. Or dark could be seen as a dark or depressing time. So there's a lot of different ways. But I love to work with biology and see the biology as a metaphor and also work with mythology and look at where the animals appear in association with different gods and goddesses in mythological stories. I pull from any tradition I can find a story. So I'll pull from Greek mythology to Hindu fables all the way over to Native American myths and legends. So it's
how much
such
fun.
A vast amount of information. Yeah, there's so much information available to us these days for free. So why not learn how to start creating our own interpretations?
Well, I love the idea that it's very similar to whenever I'm explaining and kind of my formal education in forensic psychology, we do a lot of profiling. And sometimes, you know, we get caught up in the linguistics. Is it discrimination? Is it racism? Or is it just watching of people and knowing biologically, you know, behavioral patterns or prediction and anthropology and the shape of the face and genealogy and just, you know, hereditary traits, you know, where red hair comes from, or all of these different abilities to kind of know that process. And there's that profiling there that comes from a scientific place of roots, but you have to be able to break loose, like from what you said, the literal. I really like that. And we do that a lot. I like to do that with bugs. Like when I'm profiling someone, I'll ask them what their favorite bug is. And I profile from that because I kind of have this small obsession with bugs throughout fables and stories and religious tales and how they're kind of used. And that's so interesting to me. So that's so cool. And I love that answer, it was kind of a long-winded answer, but I love it because it was honestly that, you know, you have to put in the work of doing your own research and,
yeah,
you know. It's not necessary. I mean, do you believe in coincidence or synchronicity, or do you think that, you know, a person's drawn to the right path or right book, or that there's some divine intervention, or do you just kind of think it's an accumulation?
I definitely believe in synchronicity. I base my a huge part of my spiritual practice on synchronicity. And that's really what got me into spiritual, the more of a spiritual path and non-rational path and out of science. Because as a scientist, I look for patterns. And I was starting to see patterns everywhere, but there was no cause and effect between them, which is all what synchronicity is about, right? So those were the breadcrumbs that started to lead me down the path of, okay, there's something bigger going on here, because there's no way that this image could show up in my dream and then show up in the everyday when I'm not even looking for it, and in multiple different places over the course of months or years. And it was often images or symbols or encounters with animals where I saw those threads go throughout. And yeah, so synchronicity, I think, is just an amazing example. And really, you know, you're talking about proof is really the place where we're looking for proof. I think synchronicity is a great way to speak to the rational mind and say, well, look at how can you explain away all of these, you know, absolutely completely connected meaning or symbols that have no cause and effect. There's no way they're related in that way. So there has to be something more, right?
I love that. It kind of plays to this very small frequency that I think runs in every human, that there is something bigger, you know, that there is something greater. And every culture or every society or every religion or every, you know, political wing has tried to explain it or tell its tale. But it stems from that feeling that there is something a little bit bigger than ourselves. And I think it's interesting to me, I think, how some people would be drawn to animals, or other people might be drawn to numerology, or other people might be drawn to gardening. Do you think that the path that we're currently drawn to is related to maybe a past life or reincarnation, or do you think that it just is a random connection that we have an obsession with because we make the connection with that?
I think it's a combination of, I'm a believer in both nature and nurture, so I think some of it is, like you talk about, past lives or genetics, and also a lot of it has to do with our home situation and where we're raised and the experiences that we have in our developing years. And I don't know if you noticed too, but I do archetypal work. I work with archetypes and help people determine what archetypes they came into this world with. So that means I have the belief that we have a set number of archetypes that accompany us into this lifetime, and then we experience and move expression into the world through those archetypes. So the gardener would possibly have the nature child as one of her archetypes, or if she's gardening and growing food, she might have, or flowers, she might have the artist as one of her archetypes. So that's part of my belief. But yeah, I think, like you're talking, past lives also have something, and karma also have something to do with it.
Now, you had mentioned that your path was definitely identifiable with the shamanistic kind of path. Now, for someone who might be listening that has no idea what that word means, what does that word mean? What does that mean?
Yeah, shaman is a term that was taken from Mongolia and from medicine men or the spiritual leaders of a tribe in Mongolia, and put universally across the entire globe. It's come to be identified with people who are of a practice that is very earth-based. So it's a world, both a worldview and a healing modality and a spiritual practice at the same time. It's all of those. So a worldview being very earth-centered, earth-centric, and believing that everything's animate, so very similar to Buddhism. It's a healing practice in terms of that shamans are typically healers in their tribe or their community. They're either healing the relationship between the community and the natural world, or between individuals, or for an individual themselves very directly. So there's a lot different types of healing modalities within shamanism, and very much energetic and spiritual healing. And then the spiritual practice part of it is the ritual and the ceremony, which is one of the aspects of shamanism I really adore.
I love that. You describe it in a very romantic way, and it's kind of exciting because I think sometimes maybe shamanistic can carry, like you had mentioned early on in the show, some labels that aren't necessarily a realistic reflection of the lifestyle or of the spirituality. And I saw that a lot in Southern United States with the voodoo practitioners, you know, thanks to Hollywood, it had been exploited in a very strange way. And, you know, they had to just deal with it. And so sometimes it's sad to see that happen. And I love the way you describe it. So when you have mentioned that one of the parts you really adore are the rituals, what are some of the rituals that are coming up for someone who would say that they identify with shamanism?
Prayer is actually, we don't always call it prayer in the shamanic practice, but it's actually a big part of shamanic practice. Coming into, and that involves coming into communion with spirits of nature, the spirits of the direction. So a lot of people are probably familiar with the idea of the medicine wheel. So shamanic practitioners often work with the medicine wheel and often pray to and commune with and dialogue with nature spirits to see what we can do to serve and help mend maybe where things have gone wrong, where we have gone wrong in our connection with the natural world, and also to plead or ask for help. So there's both directions there. And then another part of it is just honoring. That's the name of my business, Wild Gratitude. And it's all about honoring the natural world and paying respects. That's a big part of shamanism, paying respect both to the natural world, the nature spirits, and then also our ancestors or the spirit guides that come to, and the spirit guides that come to work with us. And so those would be the big pieces of ritual I would speak of. Yeah, that people do on an individual level. On the bigger level, community level, the ceremony I do, I conduct wedding ceremonies. I do land blessings and clearings.
Okay. So is it going to be more, I know we have a large demographic of pagan and Wiccan and other kind of more natural spiritualisms, and the solstice is a big celebration, you know, or the lunar cycles, play a significant role in the ritual or the prayer process. Do you find that that's also true in shamanism?
Yeah, shamanism and paganism have a lot in common. I find I'm a regular contributor to the Sage Woman blogs, and so I find that I'm in very common and like company with the group of writers there. And there, the thing I love, though, about shamanism is shamanism is really defined about the ability to go and attain an altered state of consciousness, is the scientific term for it. And we do, the modern-day shamanic practitioners actually do that. They don't use psychedelics. Those of us that are, you know, doing this as a business, that would make it a little tough, especially for me. I don't do so well. But we use rhythmic percussion, so drumming or rattling, to go into this altered state of consciousness. And then it takes also some training, learning how to turn off the mind, the busy monkey mind, and the doubt, and go into trust and travel into other worlds. So there's an initiation that goes along with that. But it's really that altered state of consciousness, that what's called a journey, shamanic journey trance, that shamanic practitioners practice, that sets them apart from other healing modalities or spiritual practices.
So I'm going to just take a complete unique standpoint from kind of a paranormal platform, I suppose, and say that because I don't have a lot of experience with shamanism. The only person that I would say I have any experience with in that kind of realm was an Aborigine that did didgeridoo healing, and it was absolutely the most amazing experience I've ever had. I attest a lot of my post-ovarian cancer treatment to his work, and he was very, very shamanistic, I guess was how I described him, just in his belief system. But would you say that it is more rigid and structured to, You know, like, are we having to have Saint Benedictine and Ash Wednesday? Do we have to celebrate a solstice and, you know, the Yule? Or is it more about self-celebration? And, I mean, are there...
It absolutely depends on the practitioner. One of the things I love about shamanism is it's all about direct revelation. So coming into direct contact with the divine, however the person practicing it sees the divine. So shamanism is really like a container. That's another really great way of seeing it, that it's a container of a worldview. So there's throughout the world, there's been anthropologists that have gone and studied shamanic traditions around the world that goes back tens of thousands of years on every continent. So we all have a shaman somewhere in our ancestry. But they've gone and they've studied. I love that. Yeah. They've gone and they've studied all these cultures, and they found things that are similar all across the world. That there are three landscapes in the and when we go into what's called non-ordinary reality, we go there during the journey, and in non-ordinary reality, there are three landscapes. There's lower worlds, there's middle world, where we are right now, and then there's upper world. But it's really up to the practitioner to color those worlds. It depends on, are they Catholic, or are they pagan, or are they possibly atheist? What they see and experience when they go into non-ordinary reality and they travel to these different worlds is going to be really based on what their cultural and religious backgrounds are, because they're going to see through the filters of which they believe the spirits are going to talk to them, and they're going to encounter the spirits through their own belief systems or filters. And that's what I love about shamanism, because I can work with someone from any faith. I have Christian, very Christian clients. I have pagan clients. I have people who are Buddhist or have a very strong yogic or Hindu tradition that they follow. So, and the journeys I do for them totally brings in mythology based around what culture they're in. So it's really a beautiful container in that way.
So when you say the journey that you do for them, is that like a psychic reading, or is that a teaching class, or is that what is that when you are doing the journey?
When I'm doing the journey, So I do these private sessions for people. I call them healing sessions, but they have a lot more components than that. But the healing is the main pieces of it. So I go on this journey trance. I travel in my mind's eye, my soul travels into non-ordinary reality. I go to either lower world or upper world, and I speak with the spirits and work with the spirits on behalf of my clients. So we're looking at bringing back healing and also bringing back guidance. And the guidance comes back in the form of a story. So there's this whole story. And while I'm doing the journey and listening to drumming, I have my eyes closed. I'm in a very mindful state. And have very little awareness of my immediate physical surroundings, because most of my attention is on where I've traveled in my imagination or in my mind's eye. And while I'm doing the journey, I narrate the whole story. So I might go over a mountain and meet a tiger. We might go for a swim in a lake. And there's this whole drama really that unfolds, which is ends up being a mythology for the client, that they can find symbolism and metaphor and meaning that helps them gather guidance for what healing has come forward or where they need to go. It's less of a psychic reading in that I'm not necessarily looking into the future. Sometimes these journeys, depending on I just hand it over to the spirits, to however they want to take it, and sometimes there will be a projection into the future, and it's not always clear that that's the case, but it becomes clear over the next few months as things unfold. They're like, oh yeah, this is this part of the journey, and oh, this over here is the next part of the journey, and they start to get it. I really say it's more than like a reading or a fortune telling, that it's a roadmap, that the spirits are giving them a roadmap for where they're going, so they can look for signposts and guideposts along the way and get an affirmation they're on the right path.
So would you find that the information that you receive is more of a life lesson type information, like maybe forgiveness, or that this person really needs to heal in the realm of grieving, that there's, you know, some healing that needs to be done there. Are you finding that you kind of go into these categories of healing or mental health, or is it more specific, like you need to buy that second house on Beard Street, you know, the one with the backyard? Are the spirits giving specific information, or would you find it's more kind of life lesson related?
Definitely life lesson related, because I'm traveling into the spirit realm, which in at least my belief system and the way I was taught is this, where the spirits are in non-ordinary reality, are in an unpolarized world. There is no, in the spiritual realms, the spiritual worlds, there's no good and bad, black or white, left or right. And what that means is that we don't necessarily, they don't necessarily care what happens if we buy that house on that street, or if we stay living where we are right now. Ultimately, to the spirits or spiritual realm, there's no consequence which direction we go. And that's why I don't get into the literals of should I go and ask, you know, take this job right now. Those kind of questions I really want to leave up to that person and their own intuition. What I'm there to do is to help them develop their relationship with their intuition, help them find courage. So a lot of the types of healings I'll bring back are in relationship to courage, are in relationship to self-expression, are in very much about self-love, about trust and faith. So yeah, very much life lessons in that kind of way.
Very interesting. Now, when you are referring to your guides, or when you're on the journey and you're going and you're talking to these spirit guides that are either on the upper or the lower, how do they appear to you?
I work with animals. That's just me. A lot of shamanic practitioners will work with ancestors or angels. Some even work with saints or other things along those lines, different deities. But I work with animals. That's just where my gift falls in. So when I go, I'm accompanied by a whole host of different power animals that serve me along the way. I'll occasionally have a guide show up in some type of human form, may very much look exactly like a human, or may sometimes just be a light being in the shape of a human. But mostly I work with the animals.
Do you find that that helps you in, like, animal communication and animal psychic work, or is it just that they help connect you to your spiritual realm?
I do some work with people and their animals. I really, because I'm so mindful of how much we project onto our animals and how much we need them to fill in certain areas for us and how much they do really give to us. When I work for people, I really like to work on their relationship between them and their animal. So where they might near each other or might have similar woundings or similar gifts, I like to pull those things out and really help build the relationship between an owner and their pet. That's an important piece to me because I really like to honor the integrity of that animal and their own soul's path and their own, because, man, animals, they don't have a lot of choice in which way their lives go. They're really subject to us and what we're doing. So I really like to, as much as I can, nurture what gifts they're bringing here to the world and also the relationship between them and their owner to try and bring it to kind of even a higher level if I can.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. Wow, it's so cool. It's so cool because my sister tends to be, she doesn't have any connection to people, but she sometimes will get information from animals about their people. And so sometimes when people have that animal communication, I'm always like, are they talking to you or are you talking to them? You know, like how do you, what, you know, in which direction is it going, or is it been, you know, actively on both? I don't know. It's just, it's interesting because I don't have a psychic connection to animals, so I'm always very intrigued by that. But okay, so I do have so many questions, and I'm trying not to bombard you here. I'm just so excited to have you on the show. And I've got questions coming in from the chat room as well. Someone had asked me specifically, you had mentioned nurture being important. Did your parents have a role in helping you become the shaman that you are today? And I do. I think that's a good question. So do you think that your parents supported that, or how did they play into that?
Most definitely. Yeah, most definitely. They both very much took care of my relationship with nature, even though we lived in suburbia, which is fairly uniform in terms of the amount of animals and plants available for me to study. They, on vacation, took me to national parks and natural areas, wild areas. So they really honored my connection to the natural world and shared that with me. It was something that we did together. And they also, I had to have pets. It was so important to me. And so they got me all sorts of different pets that I had got to grow up with. I had dogs and some rabbits and a turtle and a couple birds for a while. So that was very much nurtured just my connection with nature. In terms of my spirituality, they were both very open and didn't have high expectation or a strict expectation that I should follow a given spiritual path. But they did expose me to church. I went to mostly Lutheran churches, and so I was familiar with religion and didn't grow up totally naive in those realms. And at the same time, when I was probably around 11 or 12, like I mentioned earlier, my mom started working with a group. She actually took a 3-year class in light work meditation and light work healing. And she was kind enough to share parts of that with me as she went along. And occasionally I got to go and be with a group of women she was studying with. So I was exposed to alternative spiritual ideas outside of a religious ideology at a very early age. So I really had the chance to be open-minded, which was fantastic. And when I decided to move from science to shamanism, they were both incredibly supportive. They were a little tentative for me just because I'm obviously going more into the fringe and not in a in a profession that the way has been, you know, very well paved at this point. It's not been so. There are some challenges there, which they of course are a little worried and protective of their daughter, but it's they've been incredibly supportive and proud of me, which has been a wonderful gift. I'm so grateful for that.
Wow. So cool. I mean, what is the, I mean, obviously I don't know the statistics or the likelihood, but of, you know, being able to have that, happen is just, it's like the, again, synchronicity. It's that recipe, for things to happen as they should and that they are and so forth. So I guess I'm excited because I think, as a parent and as someone who's always really interested in spirituality, especially explaining that to my children as we grow up, what would you say is the most important message of the shamanistic practice? You know, maybe sometimes people would identify, you know, Christianity with salvation and Jesus Christ, or you know, or Buddhism with Buddha and enlightenment and the, you know, not wanting, or the noble truth, or something.
Yeah. Or loving kindness,
Right. Yeah. What is it that you would say is kind of the motto of shamanism, or the pillars of that lifestyle or worldview even?
I would think the most important thing is that all life is interconnected. I think that one truth in and of itself is a very big piece of shamanism, because the shamanic practitioner in any position they're in, even if it's someone just practicing shamanic journeying for themselves, they're really looking and learning about all the ways that we are connected. We are connected as humans, we are connected to the trees, the air, the wind, all of that, and then gratitude, I think, also for those connections and feeding those connections, you know, being giving and serving those connections as well as receiving a gift of them. In Peruvian shamanism, there's a beautiful way, a term that they use for it. It's called Ani, A-Y-N-I, I think it's spelled. I always get the Y and the N reversed, but the translation is sacred reciprocity, and I think that's just absolutely beautiful. So that's one of the really big pieces, and then also direct revelation, the ability for we have to come into direct contact with the divine and the sacred in the everyday, in the mundane, because it's all sacred.
Even the 9-to-5 job and the horrible boss and the routine.
Yep, it really is. Yeah, that's where the gifts start to come in, because when those little synchronous moments happen, when those little things happen during the day where our day is interrupted with a yellow butterfly crossing our path, that means something to us from some other experience we've had. That's something that makes us stop for a moment and takes us, our breath away, and reminds us of all of creation and how fortunate we are to have this experience here.
Where do you believe that the spirit or the soul goes after the body dies when you're a shaman?
That's one of the things that shamanism is a container for. So it really depends on the culture and the belief systems there. Me personally, I don't know the exact answer to that, but I have a couple of answers for myself that suffice. There's really a belief that, which is somewhat similar to Buddhism, but a belief that we become one with all that is. So we become one with all of creation. And if you look at it from a scientific sense, you know, we have stardust in our bodies. You know, we are water, so we are connected to the moon and the oceans and the tides and the heavens.
Carl Sagan.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I love him. Yep. So that's one belief. And then the other is just that we go into non-ordinary reality. We go to upper world or lower world or one or the other, or both, who knows? And we are just there on the other side, or just beyond what people can sense and taste and smell and feel. And I do believe in reincarnation, so I don't know what the timing is on all of that, how long we spend in spirit form and when we come here, because there really is no time, except for in our illusion that we live in. So, yeah, it's really hard to know exactly what it is. There's a couple possibilities that really fascinate me and help me sleep at night. Yep.
I like that you still do hold on to some roots that are scientifically based. And a lot of times I'm always trying to explain to people how exciting it is that now with kind of quantum science and the more that we learn about how, you know, mystical the tiniest of tiny is, and that it still has the ability to change its mind and react and be a part of, you know, that there isn't this piece. It's deeply connected. It's exciting. You know, I think where some people see that there's a duality, it's almost as if, you know, we're proving scientifically that spirituality is, and vice versa, which is kind of cool, you know. So that's exciting. Anyway, I want to, we've got the last 10 minutes here. I want to talk about your book, because we've done some kind of sidewalk walking, which I do enjoy. But I want to talk about, you know, writing a book takes work, and it takes effort.
Yeah.
And it's a vulnerability, and you kind of do it for a purpose. And again, with no synchronicity aside, the title you chose and the subject matter you chose, it all very much means something. So why did you choose to write about what you did, and what is your book about?
My book, very simply, is a spiritual memoir, and I never intended to write a memoir. It was not something I ever thought I'd do in my life. I knew I would write a book, but I didn't know it would be my own story. And the very outward, external reason why I wrote the book is because I woke up one morning and had all the chapter titles in my head, and in the exact order and the exact titles that you see in the book now. But there is really, the story is my relationship with a couple of hawks in a raptor education program. As I was developing a relationship with these hawks and learning to train them and care for them in a very direct way, I was also learning about shamanism, so it's my entry into the shamanic world and out of the rational scientific realm. And so I think it's a great gift for people in that way, so that they get the opportunity to see that all the same doubts that we all encounter when we are letting go of logic and the fears and also excitement that come along on that path. But I really, very strongly, I felt that the two hawks that I worked with gave their lives to the story and really gave everything they had. And part of the reason why they were here on this planet was to contribute to that story, regardless of if it was mine. I just happened to be the player in the story. And so I really wanted to honor them and the gift they brought through to me and then to the greater world by writing the story. And in honoring them, honor all of creation or all of the wild ones who are trying to speak to us all the time, who are speaking to us all the time and just dying literally for us to listen. So that was why I was compelled to write this story.
Now, in hindsight, do you feel like the book kind of wrote itself, or that this is something that you still look to kind of because it was a dissociative process and you kind of, you know, find yourself reading it now and thinking like, wow, this is insightful, or or is it more of a hindsight kind of a thing?
I find when I go back and read parts, like when I'm doing book signings and book readings, when I go back and read parts of it, every time there's another layer that unveils itself to me. And in many ways, I'm reading someone else's story, and then at other times, I'm completely, absolutely in awe and grateful that I had the opportunity to have that experience in my life. And it's very much like a shamanic journey in that way. I love shamanic journeys because of that. Because it's a story or a mythology that unfolds, there's so many ways to interpret it. And to turn, it's like a turning a stone over. You see a different color, a different pattern every time. And that's absolutely why I love this work.
That's so cool. Again, for our listeners, that sometimes we've had shows all about synchronicity, and for some people, it's difficult for them to identify with what that is. You know, when we mention in hypnotherapy, you know, what are some of your daily anchors? What are things that you always remember looking at, you know, throughout the day? And for people who necessarily aren't visual people or visual learners, you know, it's it might be more difficult. Do you feel that being a kinesthetic person, being a visual person, helps you go on your shamanistic journey? Or do you feel like, you know, that gives you kind of a leg up? I'm interested in how it might work for someone who is maybe more auditory, or maybe that's why there's drumming. Is it a full sensory experience, or is it more inclined
to... It eventually turns into that with practice, with years and years of practice. So I teach people how to journey, and one of the initial conversations that we have in these journey workshops is that we all have a primary channel, that, you know, some of us are auditory, some of us are very kinesthetic, and some of us are visual. So it's identifying that, yes, we're going to have one channel through which the information comes. And so if we're expecting to go and have a huge Technicolor movie appear in front of us and it doesn't, don't be disappointed. Check in with the other channels. And then as we learn to trust our primary channel and work through that channel, we start to have other channels open up and information come other ways. And as a shamanic practitioner, I can definitely say when I do journeys for people, it each person, the journeys that I experience on their behalf are more geared towards their primary channel. I'm checking in on all channels, but it's very interesting how much different the experience is depending on the person. And because I'm journeying for different people with different skills and different primary channels, that's basically honing all of my senses at once, which is really awesome.
Yeah, very cool. It seems like something that is kind of a self-exploration journey, as far as if somebody wants to kind of go down the shamanistic path and find out what works for them, that maybe you can act as a guide with, you know, suggestions on that. But it's, It's just so interesting to me. It's just so fascinating because a lot of what we talk about here on the Skeleton Key is a lot of questions in relation to psychology or questions in relation to the paranormal. And, you know, maybe we go to a client's home who's experiencing knocking and hearing voices and seeing apparitions or things like that. Now, if you were someone who was coming in to help a client like that who had a lot of anxiety in relation to maybe something they thought was haunting them, what is your advice to them? And, you know, in what way would you be able to help with that shamanistic background?
Well, I think one of the things we would do is spend some time talking about their sense of safety in the home and where they've had that and how they feel that and where they encounter safety anywhere, you know, what home means to them. And then when at the beginning of the sessions, we talk about basically what's up for them, what's occurring for them, where there's anxieties possibly, or where things are going really well and they want to explore and learn more about why that's happening or how that's happening. And then based on that conversation, we pretty much then offer that up to the spirit when I go on the journey. And what unfolds in the journey does happen to often, very often, relate back to the conversation we had. So I might expect that there would be some healing for that person around their sense of home or their sense of safety. And I really try to take the emphasis off of what's going on outside of people, be it in their home or be it in their relationships, and bring it back to them. And how can they foster their own soul's courage? And how can we bring back parts of who they are that they've lost, their gifts, their ability
that
to
empowerment.
Find home wherever they are. Exactly. Yep. That's a huge part of the work I do. Yep.
I love that. I love that. I love it. Well, it's Stacy Couch, everyone, for who those of you just tuning in. And if you're just tuning in, shame on you. Definitely go to Paramania Radio, go to The Skeleton Key and download free, listen anywhere, listen again over and over. On tonight's show, because we're here at the end. And so I want to thank you, Stacy. Where can people quickly, where can they find you?
On my website, wildgratitude.com.
Wildgratitude.com. There you go. Author, gifted shaman, excellent, excellent radio guest. Thank you, Stacy, so much for joining us tonight. I hope that those of you listening will go check out her site, check out her book, and definitely share tonight's radio show with someone that you love. And definitely tune in next week here on The Skeleton Key with me, your host, Paranormal Sarah.
Thank you for listening to The Skeleton Key. Join host Paranormal Sarah at her new day and time, Tuesdays, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, only on the Paramania Radio Network.